Welcome, everybody, to Game Store Profits, the podcast where two guys sit around and talk about God and about games and about the magic that happens when these two things come together. My name is Mike Perna.
My name is Jeff Romo, and I'm no longer lonely.
Dude, you did perfectly fine without me.
Oh, I had fun. I had a lot of fun, don't get me wrong. Especially the 75 takes that I had to get to the point where I would have fun.
Well, see, that's what the beauty of the internet is and the beauty of podcasting. Because I've had people come up to me all the time and say, guys, it's amazing that you don't stutter or say or have problems. And I tell them, this is not natural. This is not how we actually work. This is the beauty of editing.
Yeah, if you're not hearing like a buzzing fan or the sound of my computer seizing up as it's trying to run Audacity, that's because of editing.
We work hard to provide the best service available, because Lord knows we don't have the talent.
This is all for you, folks.
So, Jeff, man, I mean, obviously we had the last podcast episode, which was 106. Now we're on 107. Yep. What you got going on, man?
Well, I have been skull deep in Victoriana prep. It's been just Victoriana all day, all night. I think about it at work. I think about it when I go to bed. You know, it's getting a little bit obsessive.
You have been sending out all these really cool little things for us, and we haven't even started yet.
Yeah, you know what? I'm trying to make sure I keep the excitement at a very high level, because me personally, I'm totally excited, and I just want all of you guys to feel that as well. I think I've only like put maybe one or two little posts out on the tavern just to kind of give people a little preview. But yeah, you guys are getting them all. As soon as it comes out of my head and I can commit it to my phone, boom, it's out there for you guys to consume. But yeah, that's been my life. Roll 20, like kicking out the macros, getting the maps set up. I've been trying to recode a character sheet, which isn't quite working as well as I thought, because I don't know API as well as I thought I did. But I have a basic line there, and then we all have the PDFs to fill out and post together and stuff. But oh my gosh, it's just Victoriana. But I did. I did have time to play one game, and we can talk about it in a little bit. But how about you, man? I think you went somewhere, and then you came back.
I went to the most magical place in gaming.
Da la 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 la!
Yeah, I just got back from Gen Con. It's weird that it's been like a full week and change since I was in Indy. That's weird. But yeah, no, it was such a good trip. So glad I could be there. It was really cool because, I mean, I don't want to just rehash the stuff I did in the bonus episode, but it was really cool to see, like, I met a bunch of regulars, and it was really, really fun.
Yeah. Well, that's half the fun, is just the face-to-face interactions. I mean, yeah, you can, you know, I would assume you had the press junket passed where you could get in early and get some of your shopping done, but then the rest of the time it's just, hey, who are you? Let's talk. Let's get together. Let's do this. I mean, being able to meet some of the folks, like the guys at Gamers Table, and Shut Up and Sit Down, and of course the esteemed Geek Preacher. I mean, come on.
I didn't get to meet Shut Up and Sit Down this year.
Oh, I thought you did.
No, that was the previous year. I ended up gaming like at a table next to them. Bunch of cool guys, but no, I didn't get to see them this year. Mostly because like half of them weren't there this year. There's all sorts of craziness involved with that. But I did get to see a whole bunch of people, and there were times when I was gaming and I found myself looking around going, you guys are all on the interwebs reviewing the games. You guys are the people that I look to get the information for our podcast.
Shh, don't share that.
I fully copped to it when I was there. Yeah. Even there was one time that I'm vehemently against rampant name dropping, but right, just to give you the epitome of it, there was a time when I showed up to play a game, one of the games that I ended up bringing home. I answered a text, or not a text, more like and I have to be good about this, because I've been corrected a bunch of times because I almost want to have him give me like speech lessons as to how to say his last name. Marty Connell.
Oh, she got to be partisan. Connell. Partisan.
I want to say it's Marty Connell.
Okay.
And because I was informed horribly that I've been talking to the man for over a year, and I have no idea how to pronounce his last name. But apparently I'm not alone in this, so I take solace in the fact that there's you know, safety in numbers.
That's right.
But anyway, I met up with him and his lovely wife, Vanessa, who said super nice things about me on their last podcast, and so she is, of course, my favorite.
There you go.
And Vanessa actually put out the tweet and said, hey, we're in Hall B, we're going to play The Grizzled. Now, The Grizzled is a game I'd heard about literally at the con and not beforehand. I had no, it is my hidden gem, as I said in the podcast, yeah. The bonus content that I put out. So I have to play this. I've heard so much about it. I have no idea anything about how it plays. Like, awesome. So I wandered over to Hall B, and I, you know, through a series of tweets, I found out where they are, and I sat down. And it was Marty and Vanessa and the boys, and it was great. And I was hanging out with them. And before I knew it, I look up. And there's a bunch of people showing up. And before I knew it, I was playing a game of The Grizzled with Marty and Vanessa, but also Mark from Board Game Corner, and Chaz Marler from Pair of Dice Paradise.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, how is this? And I look over next to me, and there's a bunch of other people who, again, I don't want to name drop, but there's a bunch of people that you would know playing another game right next to us. And I'm just sitting there, and in the back of my head, I can't help but like hum that old thing from Sesame Street, the yeah. One of these things doesn't belong here. And I'm telling you, man, Gen Con is so cool. Like, in all honesty, I keep saying that the cool thing about Gen Con is you go to Gen Con for the shopping and for the industry contacts.
Mm-hmm.
I got my shopping done, other than picking up The Grizzled, which was a last minute, I had to play it before I bought it thing.
Yeah.
I had everything done day one. I knocked out, I knew what I wanted, I knew what the budget was, and I got it all knocked out day one.
Yeah, that's a common story I've heard across the interwebs with regards to people who went there. It's just like, if you get that opportunity to get it knocked out in the park at first, get it done, and then let right. The river flow.
Yeah, so that was my con. I ended up hanging out with people. I cleared away all the stuff about bringing games home and really just got to hang out with people. And man, I, as great as it is to get the cool games, like, I love the fact that I can show up to an event and be like, hey, here's a game that you can't play for another month and a half.
Nice.
You can play it with, like, I like doing that. That's fun.
Nice.
But yeah, but the ability to meet these people and hang out with them, it's so awesome. The best quote, and I forget who originated it. I've heard it from so many different sources now. I forget who originated it. But it's the idea that Gen Con is gamer summer camp.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that.
It's the idea where, you know, you make the friends 1 year, and then year after year, as you come back, you're so excited to see them again and to touch base and to hang out with them. Man, that's Gen Con, and I'm super, oh, I love it so much. I can't wait for next year. I'm already putting together a minion core for next year.
Yeah, I noticed that. I've already got a message saying, well, I'm thinking, well, Pernance, not until like next year. And I'm thinking, they sold out like 2 years before. You know,
here's,
we need to start early.
Here's why I'm already establishing the minion core, because in order to do the minions, I want to have a hotel room.
Yeah.
Because as great as the place we stayed in this year was, it's really hard unless you have a car, or in our case, we needed two, because we were 45 minutes away.
Ooh, that's not a walk. And you can't walk that, Perna.
No, it was a 45-minute drive. And so my goal is to get a hotel room. However, the kick in the face of getting a hotel room for Gen Con is real. They've tried to do a whole bunch of different stuff to make that more streamlined and easier to get to.
Yeah.
Even with that, it sold, like, every hotel in the city sold out in like 2 hours.
Wow.
So if I'm going to be the guy who has to go to the early service that Sunday, because usually it opens on Sunday or Monday.
Right.
If I'm going to be the guy who like goes out of his way to make sure we get a hotel room, I need to make sure that I have guys committed to be about the business of inroads,
mm-hmm.
who want to be in there and share the cost of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my goodness. I mean, just the idea of you find out when Gen Con is, and then 2 hours later, I mean,
It's gone.
it's gone. You know, that's it. Poof. All the hotel's gone. It's
Yeah.
insane.
And I will do it. And we'll, you know, I'm hoping that the Minion Corps will rise and
Yeah.
we'll get them in there. So, you know, next year you might see even more stuff from us, but
Yeah.
we will see.
It will be a wonderful dream for me to make it happen. So I'm gonna start maneuvering, start moving the meeples along the board to try and make things happen to get out there, because I'd love to be face to face with you, man.
Yeah. Something that many people might not know is that nobody on the Inroads board has, well, you and Basha have been together because you're
Right.
like down the street from each other.
Yeah, he's like a few blocks away.
And there was a time when Luke and Basha were hanging out together,
Yeah.
but I have not been face to face with any member of the Inroads board in the real world.
Yeah, just in the virtual world.
That right there is a testament to the awesome power of the internet.
Amen to that.
Because we're building this ministry and we've never occupied the same space.
Pretty amazing. You use those tools God gave you.
Yeah. But
Love it.
anyway, I was able, you know, I got back home from Gen Con and, you know, had the crushing reality of getting back to work after being at Gen Con.
Yeah.
And I will say, though, that I'm happy to report I have gotten every game I brought home to the table at least once since I got back.
Oh, we're gonna dig into some of that. We're gonna dig into some of
Well,
that.
you've seen a bunch of the reports of the stuff I've brought back. You
Yeah.
say that you've listened to the report of me on the podcast, the bonus content that I put out.
Yep.
So, was there anything that you heard me talk about on that podcast that you specifically want me to? Because when I did that podcast, I hadn't road tested most of those
Ashes.
games.
Sorry. That just totally came out. Sorry.
Just bubbled over.
I just came
Ashes,
out.
huh?
Sorry. Sorry.
Ashes is phenomenal. Ashes is
Oh
phenomenal, and I'm not just going to say that because I got to talk to Isaac and because I'm a Plaid Hat fanboy.
Come on now.
Ashes is a really great game. My brother came over and we started playing it and we realized we were playing it completely wrong, so I had to go back and try again. Got the rules right, and man, it's such an interesting little play with the cards and the dice. The way it works is that you basically I love the theme. Before I get into the mechanisms, I love just
Yeah.
the theme of it because basically it's Highlander.
That's exactly why
It's basically Highlander. Like all the Phoenixborns are out there with a little bit of the Phoenix's power after this great battle where, you know, you're basically the Phoenixborn basically push out this attacking race that's like destroying everything. And then they're left there going, all right, I want more of the power. And so they all end up starting to fight each other and to destroy each other in order to suck up that much more power. It is literally Highlander. You are literally going for the quickening,
Who was
and I love it.
Christopher Lambert? Tell me the truth. Tell me the truth.
Yeah, no, it is fun. You're playing cards, and basically each round you get to play, you kind of alternate turns. And each turn you get a main action and a side action. Now, the main action is either you're playing spells or you're putting out allies or you're using some of the spells. There are different spell types, which is really cool and I like it. I think it's an action spell, which is basically one and done. It's like, boom, I'm going to hit you with this. Like the first game I played was a guy named Cole Rorquin, and Cole has one called A Thousand Blades. And basically what it does is it does one damage to the Phoenixborn and one damage to all his allies, all his units.
Nice.
That's an action spell. It's w do it once and then get rid of it. There are reaction spells, which basically if this, then this kind of happens.
Right.
My brother was playing a guy named Noah, and Noah's big obnoxious thing is, oh, you killed one of my guys. Here's two giant spiders that come in the field in front of him. Ah.
Oh, sad face.
It's so obnoxious. There's actually alteration spells, which I'd forgotten, which are your standard build up your units.
Right.
one of the ones that I had at my disposal was spiked armor, which was really cool. It gave my guy more health and it did more damage every time somebody came up against him.
Got it.
So you're basically going back and forth, doing main action, side action, main action, side action. The ready spells are great too because they help you bring out new monsters and everything like that, called conjurations. And some guys are designed to have lots of little people. Oh my goodness. There's the one Phoenix Born, I can't remember, her last name is Summerguard, I remember. I only played her like half a game, like I didn't even get a full game in with her. Oh my goodness, you can like fill the field with tiny creatures when you're playing with her. Like she just has this, like a wall of small little guys that just assault the crap out of everyone.
Nice.
Again, the game that I played all the way through was with Cole. Cole has one conjuration. There's only one type of creature that he'll bring out other than his little allies that he brings out. And that is called the Iron Rhino.
See, and that's cool.
And that's all
you need,
if
that's
going
to be
really
your one, that's a pretty good one to have. Because, I mean, you have, like, these other people who are summoning seaside ravens and three-eyed owls and here's an abundance spell.
Iron Rhino.
It's like, forget it. Iron Rhino.
But no, and then it becomes this great little dance of, do I attack now or do I wait? If I don't do it right now, I can maybe wait till next time. But if I also love the way the dice play with the cards, because it brings up this resource management, this holy crap, I want to do this, oh, but I didn't roll right for it. And so you have this balance of trying to figure out how to get your guys to the field when you don't have the resources available to do so.
Right.
And, oh, it's a quick game. It's a fun game. They're already talking about bringing out new Phoenix Born with more cards. I will probably get them. And
this will be how you just kind of slip them in.
I will probably get them. And I'm gonna drop this bomb. I really am. I've said before that I can only maintain one card game in my life.
Oh no, this is the thing that shook my world when you posted this.
I can only maintain one card game in my life.
You're gonna say
and
it.
And as much as I love Netrunner, and it's still in my collection, I have no desire to get rid of it. As much as I love Doomtown, and I'm not getting rid of it, and it will still be in my collection. Ashes has a much lower barrier to entry.
Yes.
When you get an expansion, it's pretty much another deck that you can play with, and it's a lot quicker.
See, that was going to be the question. One of the big questions I was going to ask you. Now, you said you played with just your brother, right? So it was just the one person.
Yeah.
So you're talking what's quick, like 20, 30 minutes or a little bit longer? What do you think?
Yeah, no, I would probably say a safe estimate would be about a half hour. If you're playing a two-player game.
Now, can you still feel the magic of this game if there were multiple people, like if there was three, four, or maybe five?
The thing I like about that, now I don't have any, you know, first-hand experience playing it with multiple people.
Right.
But the thing that makes me realize, or it makes me think and ponder the various aspects of multiple people, is that you can start building little alliances. You can say, if we take it, it literally is Highlander. Because in the old Highlander movies, you have those guys like, oh, we're totally buddies, but you do realize that if this comes down to you and me, we're going to have to fight each other. But there's this very tenuous kind of alliance. You can see that happening in multiple people. You can be like, you know, if we take them out, we'll get it done real quick. And they can't fight against both of us.
Come on, Mione. Come on, Mione. Why don't you come over here? We'll work it out.
Exactly, But then you realize that even when that person's done, you're not done because you have to fight against the other player.
So the alliance is there with the consummate knowledge that it's going to come to blows later.
Oh, yeah. No, it's so good. It's so good.
See, that's kind of what was really intriguing for me was that idea of, and you have that in other card games and the alliances and stuff that you can build. But the idea of turning it from a cooperative back to a competitive is kind of a nice little strategic part. Like if you have like maybe four or five people playing, might be a little awkward with three, but yeah.
Oh, and there's a bunch of stuff that also goes into this because it's really built in, and they have rules set in the instruction book on how to draft.
Nice.
So you can basically just take whichever Phoenixborn you want and draft your deck. There are rules for that. Okay. And so you have the ability straight out the box. No additional stuff required. No, I need to buy this special pack of cards, which was always, like, I wanted to do a Netrunner draft so bad, but every time you do it, you need to buy one of these little decks of cards.
Oh.
And I don't want to do that. Ashes doesn't need anything else. In the box, you can draft, you can do pre-constructed, you can do, you know, here's every Phoenixborn has their own deck.
And you don't feel like it's, like, kind of limiting as far as how many cards are available? Because, I mean, you get a plethora of cards, but I'm just saying.
You, straight out of the box, you get six decks of cards.
Okay, all right. I gotcha. So there's a lot of malleability there and a lot of variation you could go through.
Oh, yeah, and I'm convinced that once, you know, I've played enough that I really know how all the little cards work in and around themselves, I think it'd be amazing to build a deck. I don't think I'll do a lot of pre-constructed stuff unless I have other people who buy Ashes.
Right.
Because it's really annoying to build my own little deck only to break it apart again the next time somebody wants to play.
I gotcha.
But if I had somebody who was playing and had their own set, I would totally do that.
Yeah.
And Plaid Hat is really building up this organized play around this. They really want to see stores get this to tables and really have that competitive aspect to it. And I'll tell you what, man, if they can build up that kind of support, like right now, it's still kind of tentative that I say that it's my Doomtown killer. It's going to be my number one card game. But if they build that up, if they get that support system going,
that'll do it. That'll do it.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, come on, the words are out there already. You know that it's going to replace Doomtown. It's kind of out there now.
Oh yeah, I put it out there. I showed my fanboy colors, man, and it was so cool because not only did I get to show my fanboy colors because I started out talking to Isaac saying, I still think the City of Remnant is one of my favorite games. It's an underrated gem. And he's like, whoa, really? What I didn't end up recording was that after we got done with that recording, he and I started talking about plans for taking the core bones of what City of Remnant was and using that to build other games.
Oh, okay.
That's something that he's working on. I can't tell you anything more than that because
don't.
He's you know, it's not like it's happening like next year or anything. No. It's something that he's got on the back burner because Ashes is kind of his baby right now.
Right.
But the fact that I was sitting there talking, I go, yeah, City of Remnant was awesome. I love this and this and this. And he goes, I want to do that and I want to try and maybe do some Crossroads cards elements to it. I'm like, oh, please do this.
See, now that sounds really good because City of Remnant really could lend itself to something like that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that was a ton of fun. And yeah, Ashes is phenomenal. Oh, it's phenomenal.
See, now, I mean, there's kind of an ulterior motive why I asked about Ashes just because I know, I mean, it's not the only deck building game out there, but it was kind of like, I'm really intrigued by that game and I haven't gotten a chance to play Doomtown because I remember a few episodes back, that was kind of one of my first deck builders that I wanted to pick up and that was all your fault. But
yeah,
I'm still jumping on your coattails and thinking about Ashes now. And so I'm leapfrogging over Doomtown potentially, but
yeah, no, I would say that if you have people around you that are playing Doomtown, don't take what I'm saying now and say, oh, well, Mike's throwing down Doomtown and you know, it's not worth it. No, if you have people to play Doomtown with,
yeah.
Oh my goodness, pick up Doomtown.
Yeah.
I will not turn my back on that game. It is still phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying that Ashes is a much easier card game for people who aren't willing to commit to that kind of level of play. Mm-hmm. Ashes has a much, much, much lower barrier to entry.
And that's exactly why I was kind of gearing that way, because the reviews I've seen, you know, I've seen and heard your discussions about it, and then that led me to the questions I asked you, like, you know, well, what do you think of the cars that come with it? Is there a lot of variation? Do you feel that way with two players, three players, four players? So, I mean, it's kind of like, if it's a one and done that I could get and then see if I really have a taste for this kind of a game, then I could say, yeah, this is awesome. And even if I don't get any more, it's still an awesome game. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I don't have to get the expansions.
Speaking as a guy who plans on getting the expansions, especially because he's already playtesting them, and so I've seen pictures of at least one of the Phoenix Born that are coming out, and I want him. Speaking as that guy, I will still say that if you buy the core box of Ashes, mm-hmm. you have a great game.
Yeah,
it's not missing anything.
Yeah, no, that's totally what I was thinking. Okay, cool. I mean, and there's another reason why I bring up a deck building game, and that's because of what I ended up playing.
you were playing a little Marvel Legendary.
I did, and I had a lot of fun, and it's on the expensive side, and it's been out since 2012. You know, I keep wanting to think of baseball cards because it's put out by Upper Deck Entertainment, but it's not baseball cards; it's a deck builder game. But a buddy of mine had it. And we had like two or three other people that were in the house, and so we got at least three of us together to play. I don't think you guys have covered it on any of the podcasts before this, but in basic, Legendary is a Marvel based game. It's a deck builder, cooperative play where you're going up against, you know, baddies, you know, big bads like Doctor Doom and Loki and Red Skull and all the awesome characters that I just totally love from the Marvel Universe. And it was kind of like, it was a perfect timing because I was thinking about Ashes, and then my buddy brought this out, and he's like, hey, you know, are you talking about the Ashes game? You want to take a look at this? I'm like, yes. Marvel, yes. Captain America, yes. Cards, deck, yes. Yes, all of the things have checked off. I shall do this.
I support all of these things.
I support all of the things that you've said. Carry on, sir. And so... yeah, so we launched into it, and I gotta say, I mean, it's not overly complicated. There's not a huge plethora of cards in there. Like, I think that if I owned this game, unless I had multiple people to play with at different times, I think it may wind up on the shelf after maybe about a year or two. But, you know, there's so many expansions to it now that you can renew the game. It's just, unfortunately, it's kind of costly.
If I'm not mistaken, they just released Age of Ultron for it.
Yeah. They did. I was kind of looking at Dark City. That was one that I thought looked really awesome. He had it on his shelf, but we kind of started basic. We started at the basic game before adding any expansions. So I have been promised that we will play Dark City, which includes a couple of my favorites like Apocalypse and Mr. Sinister and some of the other Rogues Gallery and Marvel. So kind of looking forward to that. Also, the Punisher includes the Punisher, which is cool. But but yeah, as far as this one goes, the mechanics of it are pretty simple. You and your group of people, it can be run solo, but you and a group of people are basically the heroes. And the hero decks that are built up are set out at random. I think right now you randomize five characters. We ended up with Captain America. What was it here? Let me think. Captain America, Wolverine, Rogue, the Hulk, and then Black Widow. So I was like, okay, interesting combination. I think we can deal with it. And then once that's done, then you can kind of choose your level of difficulty by choosing the bad guy that you face. So they range from different point values, and therefore they have certain, you know, abilities that that you have to fight against. So we ended up going against Magneto and the Brotherhood. And then there's a randomized, I don't know if you want to call them henchmen, but basically the people that go with them all the time. There was two randomized that came out, and one was the Sentinels, and the other one is the it's basically called the Hand, which is a group of ninja assassins. But on the card itself, and this became quite a wonderful joke amongst us, they're called the Hand Ninjas. So we kind of thought about it, and we started laughing, and then we started having thumb wars and, you know, making kung fu moves with our fingers on the board and stuff like that. So Hand Ninjas.
Every time I've heard reference to the Hand Ninjas, you know, my childhood rushes back to me, and I can't help but think about the Foot Clan from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That too. That too. That's right. So we had a little bit of fun, much to the detriment of Legendary game, but it's okay. It's okay. So anyway, so you know, you randomize the heroes you play, you pick out your difficulty level. The heroes each have like a couple of point values. They also have a membership tag. So these kind of things play into like ability mods. Like for instance, if you have, I think it was like for Black Widow, she's part of the Avengers. And if in your hero group, you have another Avenger, like say Captain America, she gets certain bonuses on some of the actions that she can do. They have different types of actions. So like there's some that are covert, like the Black Widow. And I think when I was filtering through it, I saw that they have Iron Man, which has like a technical side as well. And those add in certain modifiers and things that make things really cool. But what I really like about it is the way they deal with the baddies. So like you have on the board, you have kind of like this underground system under the city, and that's where all the bad guys are emerging. You know, so it's like this little porthole, zoop, 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 here comes all the bad guys. And as they keep getting added to the board, they march to the left and out to the exit of the city. So if every round a new bad guy comes out, you have to stop them or hinder them or defeat, or I should say just defeat them, flat out defeat them, before they exit the city. And then you get wounds inflicted. There's other punishments or penalties that occur. Sometimes they're taking bystanders with them. So it's just completely bunches of loads of awful. And so that's all happening. But then you have the big bad. So like in our case, it was Magneto. And he has a scheme. It's like a grand scheme. Like he wants, you know, the mutants to rule the world. And he wants his Brotherhood to win. And so that's his main victory status. That's it. And then he has all these little twists or scheme twists that go along the way. There's eight of them. And it's like a countdown. And these cards are mixed into the bad guy deck. So every time you pull a bad guy, there's a risk that you might have a scheme card that comes out or a twist card. And that adds to a scheme. So if he's like at card one, has certain things that happen to the heroes or happens on the board. Card two, another layer of badness happens, and so on and so forth until they win. And then your job as a hero is to kind of do a combination of mixing your skills, purchasing heroes from the headquarters, you know, or recruiting them, I should say, not purchasing, but recruiting them from the headquarters to fill your deck and to make a strategic move against, you know, the baddies that are on the board, but also stopping the big bad as well. So, I mean, we just had a boatload of fun having, you know, hand ninjas flying around the board and sentinels and, you know, all sorts of just wonderful memory seeds that just kept getting planted. He's like, oh, I totally remember that. You guys remember the issue when that happened and that, and it helped that the rest of them were big Marvel nerds at the table as well. So it's not only the fun of the deck building, but it's also the fun of like the nostalgia, because they even have, I think there's an expansion that's for Secret Wars. And if I read it correctly, it's the Secret Wars from the 80s, 90s run, not the one that's right now. But I may need to confirm that. But, yeah, just a whole bunch of fun. Totally dug it.
Well, all right. I'm going to move on. We've talked about Ashes. Yeah. We've talked about the games you played. I don't want to just go through every game.
No.
Because I did that before. But while I'm here, is there any other of the games that I brought back from Gen Con that you want to hear about? So there's Blood Rage. There's Tides of Time. There's The Grizzled. There is Viceroy. I think that covers everything.
I was so locked in on Ashes, man. That was like totally, I'm still excited to hear about that. I feel stupid. I was like, oh man, because that's, again, that's kind of the one I'm focusing on that I really want to get. But, you know, you mentioned The Grizzled was kind of like an outlier that you play tested.
It was, man. When I knew I had to go over to Cool Mini or Not day one, because they had Blood Rage.
Right.
And, oh my goodness, this game has cool minis, it has Vikings, it has global destruction, and glorious death in Valhalla. Of course, you know, the Norse mythology nerd that I am,
mm-hmm.
I want to be playing this game.
Yeah.
So I went over there, and I saw The Grizzled. Like, I saw the box. But I had not heard a thing at that point. So I bought my Blood Rage, and I walked away. Throughout the day, I found myself just hopping up on Twitter or, you know, whatever, And it's like, oh, you need to be playing the Grizzled. Oh, this is the Grizzled is amazing. Oh, if you haven't picked up the Grizzled, you should totally pick up the Grizzled. I'm like, all right, the heck is this game about?
What's going on here?
Then I played it. Oh my goodness, this game, it's a game about war, but it's not about fighting.
No,
there is actually actively no combat. It goes out of its way to not have any combat. This is a game that is all about the mental state of the soldiers and how the relationships they've built affects that mental state.
Yeah.
So the gameplay is simple. There are two stacks of cards. One of them is basically called the Trials deck. And the other one that starts the game off with 25 cards on it is basically the way that you determine how you win. You win by removing all 25 cards from that deck. It is a cooperative game, and like all cooperative games, there is one win condition and a bunch of ways to lose. And the Grizzled is exactly that. Like I said, the one way to win is to remove all the decks to reveal the peace card, which basically says you all survived the war. That's the only way you win. To lose, each card has a symbol on it and a type of day. So the symbols are gas masks, whistles, and bullets. The types of day are just your normal, everyday kind of scene. There's snow, there's rain, there's night, and there's daytime.
Gotcha.
If at any point during the mission, basically every person takes a turn playing one card. If at any time there are three matching symbols or three matching types of day, mission over, horrible things will happen.
And this is in World War One, right? I mean, this is...
Yeah, this is trench warfare.
Yeah, this isn't like... This is like the gritty, grizzly... Grizzled.
the Grizzled.
Yeah, the Grizzled.
And so basically the way the overlying theme of this game is the fact that this is trauma. This is like fear and stress and tension. So that the whistle is like the sirens that are going off. Bullets are obviously you're getting shot at. Gas mask is the constant threat of some vile, awful, like absolutely eating away at everything you are. And just all the cards, regardless of day, night, snow, rain, whatever, it's all just desolate wasteland, basically. It's all ruined cities and awful.
I mean, the cover of the box kind of belies the graphicness of what's going on, which is kind of interesting.
It's the beautiful thing about it is that the artwork, there's nothing about the art blatantly that talks about this horrible, awful mental trauma that these guys are going through.
Right.
The artwork is simple and kind of beautiful in its simplicity.
Yeah.
But if you really look at it, it's really communicating these awful, just struggle. Another way you can lose, there are cards that are called trauma.
Right.
And the trauma cards basically have little like red lightning bolts on it for wounds that your guys have taken. So some of them, most of them have like one little red lightning bolt, but some of them have two. And if at any point, if one player has accumulated four wounds for those little red lightning bolts, game over.
Done
and done.
Wow.
The other thing about the traumas is that some of them just add more of the same symbols. Like, oh, look, this counts for another snow. This counts for another gas mask. There are others that change how you play the game. There's one that was the bane of my existence. I actually got this one. It's called Muted. You are physically unable to communicate the rest of the game. Not allowed to talk or communicate with the other people at all.
So not even hand gestures?
Nothing. You are not allowed to communicate at all.
Oh, man.
There's another one that... Now, one of the mechanics that is cool about this game is that if you're looking at your hand and you go, everything I do is going to make us lose, you can just say, I'm going to withdraw. When you withdraw, you have the option to have these little tiles that help you kind of support your buddies. And at the end of the mission, when everyone has withdrawn, you move all little tiles. It says left or right, or two left or two right, and you play those tiles, and then when you move them all to the appropriate people, as long as one person has the most tiles, the most support, they can get rid of their wounds.
Got it.
However, if there's a tie, there's no support. It basically washes it away.
Oh, man.
Here's what happens. If whether you lose the mission or everyone has withdrawn, for every card that is still in your hand, you have to add that many cards from the trial deck to the peace deck.
Oh.
So you are constantly cycling more cards that you have to get rid of in order to get to the end of the game.
It almost feels like a just hopelessness.
Exactly. Oh my God. This game in on the surface, it has this amazing, like, it's just fun. It's a fun game. It's an interesting cooperative game.
Right.
But there is so much subtext, so much deep stuff going on here that's communicated in these mechanics. It is crazy. When you get to a new mission, you pick a new leader, and each former leader gets it's a speech. And the speech is actually represented by a little cardboard speech bubble that has in it, like, we'll make it through this. We'll make it through this, lads, and stuff like that.
Right.
I absolutely love it. And what you can do with the speech is that you can actually say, I'm going to throw down the speech, and you can get rid of any of your gas mask cards. Basically, the idea is that you are encouraging and bolstering them not to fear the thing that they're fearing.
Right.
I will tell you this. This game that we played, I went in being told, you know, no one at the table who had played it before had won. They went in saying, don't expect to win. And I will tell you that it could have gone horribly wrong.
Uh-huh.
There's any number. It got down to the last couple plays. We had figured out, one thing that I haven't talked about is that each turn, the new leader gets to say how many cards you have to deal with in your hand. So you can try to really make a run for peace and put a large amount of cards in your hand. But the larger the number of cards in your hand, the more likely it is that you're not going to be able to get to the end of the game, to get to the end of the mission successfully.
Right.
So you're trying to balance, like, how many cards do I do?
Like, if can I take a giant bite right now and try and make it, do an end run?
Right. At the end of the game, like, I had withdrawn, I think Mark had withdrawn, and it literally came down to, all right, we need everything to work perfectly, or it's not going to work. So I think it was Chaz who used a lucky charm that got rid of one of the cards from the mission, so it freed up some space. And then Marty had a speech, and he looks across the table to his wife. And they have this moment of, I'm going to know what cards you need me to tell you to get rid of. Because obviously, if you're willing to cheat the game, you can just say, hey, tell me, you know, get rid of all these cards.
Right.
But the spirit of the game is you can't do that. Mm-hmm. And so we're sitting there, and he's like, all right, we're going to have this moment. And he looks and he goes, get rid of all the rain cards. And she just dumps like four cards out. We're like, oh my God.
What's happening?
It literally, and we looked around and we're like, nobody has cards. Nobody has cards. And we're looking at the peace symbol. We just won.
What the heck just happened?
Marty, who it was his copy of the game at the time. Marty was so shocked. He actually physically got up from the table. He couldn't, like, we were all just like, it happened. We won. Like, a week later, I was still on Twitter going, guys, I totally remember that time we killed it at the Grizzled. It was awesome.
Can you believe it?
this game is beautiful because it communicates so well the mental stress, the trauma, but it's not heavy-handed. You're not like, oh my goodness, I can't, right. Oh, I'm so depressed. It's a fun little game. But at the same point, communicates so much. I'm going to be writing about it for the site. I don't know when it's going to happen because I'm super busy right now.
You got to include some of the screenshots from the cards, like, especially, like, you know, even like I'm looking at some of the screenshots now, and like when you see like the bullet or the gas mask card that comes up and everything, it, you know, internally what it means because you know what the rules of the game are. But when you're looking at the art, kind of what I was mentioning before, the art is. It belies the heavy nature of it, but it's almost beguiling as well because of the way it's drawn. So it kind of, like you said, it kind of keeps you out of the doldrums, but it doesn't lessen the importance or the impact of the psychological struggles that are
Well,
going on.
do you really want to hear something interesting?
Yes.
Something that is kind of on this game?
Go for it.
The artwork. Do you want to know something about the artist?
I do. Wait. Okay, go.
The person who did the art for the Grizzled was one of the artists that was killed in the Charlie Hebdo shooting.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, this was originally a French game. I totally forgot that.
Yeah.
No
So
way.
that yeah, there is a lot of stuff going on in this game. And okay, I can't not talk about this part because this is really what got the spark of getting this game in my head. Because I believe it was Rhiannon Ox who tweeted this out.
Okay.
It was just a picture of this portion of it. Literally, it's called the Intention Note. And this sums up the Grizzled and its gameplay and its subtext and everything so well. It made me want to get this game. So I'm literally reading directly from the instruction book.
Okay.
At the same level as literature and cinema, games are a cultural medium which is undeniably participative. There are no subjects it can't breach, though some are more delicate than others. The life of the Grizzled is one of those. Guided by the deepest respect that the suffering endured by these men has inspired in us, we've designed and tweaked this game with this constant concern. In this earnest endeavor, we've chosen to focus on the individual with his preoccupations and his daily fears. The only escape for the men we've portrayed is to use their solidarity, their brotherhood, and mutual assistance to save one another. Without ever touching on the warlike aspect, the Grizzled offers each player the chance to feel some of the difficulty suffered by the soldiers in the trenches. Thus, the emotions around the table will often be intense. The path to victory may seem difficult, but don't get discouraged. Persist and survive the Great War.
That's beautiful.
That made me buy this game.
See, and that's the passions behind the game, you know what I mean? Like just it just evokes that response. Like I must support this, you know what I mean? Like, you know, they're I don't know. That said it all. That was beautiful.
And I mean, just the power of it. I mean, so much of what we do, we talk about the fact that games are more than just a distraction. Games are more than just a silly waste of time, because so much of what we do, especially talking to churches, it's a big thing right now to come down on video games and board games as waste of time.
Right.
And we look at this and we see beyond the cardboard. We see beyond the just simple afternoon spent giggling with your buddies.
Right.
And stuff like the Grizzled, man, that is hardcore. There is stuff that is community, like the same thing that the feeling that stirred up in me just reading that and playing through it a round of the Grizzled is the same stuff that I think about when I wrote about Freedom the Underground Railroad.
Yeah.
It has this weight of meaning, this deeper stuff that it makes you think about that. Yeah, you're having fun with this game, but all it takes is just a half second of, man, what are we actually doing here?
Yeah.
It's why I want to get my hands on the role playing game we mentioned a handful of episodes ago, called Dog Eat Dog.
It's a rough one, but it's like it's a true game. I guess not in a game sense, but you know what I mean? It's like it's an inspection into reality and drawing out those inner, I don't know, the inner gumption, the inner movement that's what drives us to do certain things. And you know, games can do that. I mean, games can evoke that response in us, you know, like something like this, like the Grizzled is to me, when I'm hearing you talk about it, the reviews that I've read about it, the art that I'm seeing on it, and especially what you just read from the rule book of all things, it's almost kind of like, man, this would be a great game to bring to like you know, like a VA hospital or something, or, you know, or just something that you can help connect with people who have been through, you know, been through something like this. And it treats it with respect. You know, it's not just a game, like you said. It's actually a recording of certain aspects of our history that we can live out.
Yeah. No, I this game it's a lot of fun and it's phenomenal to play. And it's well worth the $20 price tag I got it for.
Yeah, it's not expensive at all. That's pretty awesome. That, I don't know, that kind of draws me to another thing that you actually wrote about on the site. And one of the big experiences that you had at Gen Con, that
Oh yeah.
it becomes, again, what you just said, that games are not just for wasting time and for goofing off and telling jokes and stuff. You know, I can have all the fun and hoot and hollering about Marvel games and all that stuff, but at the same time, a couple of the guys were in that room I hadn't seen in a while. But there's also the more important connections that we have. You know, and you had that article on the En-ROADS site, and if you guys haven't read it, get out there and read it. You know, pause this episode. We'll be here. Go out and read it and check it out. It's called Remembering David. And, well, Mike, I'll give it to you. I mean, it's just a beautiful story. I mean, it's very sad, but it's a beautiful story.
Yeah, I'm hard pressed to say it more succinctly than I did because like I said at the end of that article, I tried to figure out how I was going to frame it because, when you're telling stories, like I'd like to think of myself as a bit of a storyteller. It's why my Twitter handle is Mike the Bard. Like I pride myself on being able to tell a good story. And so I sat there and I figured, I'm like, how am I going to frame this? How am I going to tell this story in a way that communicates, what I'm trying to get at here? And then I realized I don't need to frame anything. It's just telling what happened. But kind of if I'm going to condense it for those of you who might not have read the article, basically how it worked was this gentleman came up to the booth and I was just sitting there and I have, when literally hundreds if not a thousand people have crossed your booth in the course of a day, it's not scripted, but it's you kind of have your go-to openers, your go-to phrases. And mine always was, "Hey man, you having a good con?" And this dude just walked up, like with a glazed over look, and just looked like he was carrying the weight of the world. And he goes, "Honestly, it's been really hard to be here this year." And I was confused. And he then, after a little bit more prying out a little bit, he said, I forget what day it was when I was talking to him, but it was either like the 28th or the 29th. And he looks at us and goes, "Yeah, we lost our son on the 12th."
So it was like only 2 weeks before that. I mean, it
It's
was,
like a couple weeks previous. And you can read. I tried to not go into too much detail on the site because I don't want to dredge up the family's stuff. But if you want more information, you can go to the article.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm talking to this dude, and I said, I literally looked at him and go, "How are you even here, dude?" Because I'm not, I don't mean that in disrespect. I'm like, if that happened to me, I wouldn't be able to leave the house yet. Like I would be trying to figure out how to even live. And the thing that he looked at me, he said there were two things, and both of them struck me. One was he goes, "Well, there's comfort because we know right now that the devil can't take him. Like, we have faith that God has him right now, and he'll be there when we get there." And that was, I mean, that's it's the kind of stuff you read through scripture and you go through the various churchy experiences and you know that.
But what
You
happens
have.
when what happens when the rubber meets the road, right? When that
Right.
tragedy strikes you. And
I am fully versed in the fact that I believe in salvation. I believe in eternity with God. I believe in all that stuff. And I say that with 100% confidence. At the same point, I'll tell you, if I had a son and that son passed away, I would not be in a good place.
No.
Because there's a disconnect between that knowledge and that experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think I told you, I think it was when we had our like big introduction thing, and I was talking about my history with gaming and how I'd walked away from it, but then one of my friends fell ill and, you know, kind of in a way brought us all back together, brought the core group back together. And when he ended up passing away from cancer, it was like, I was pissed. I was really angry with God. I mean, he was leaving behind two kids, and kind of like you, it's like you just said, it's when the rubber met the road at that point, I don't think I responded quite as gracefully as I could have, but you know, eventually, you know, you stick with the scripture, you stick with prayer, and you find that strength. I mean, you find the Herculean strength that this man found, you know, in his faith. I don't know. It really, when I read that, I had to reread the article just because I was just like, that is an experience. That is a God experience. And I mean, you were there in that booth at the right place at the right time, but who's to say that message wasn't for you? It wasn't for everybody just to see this and to hear this, you know?
I almost broke down crying a number of occasions when talking to this family. And that was the thing. It wasn't just him. His family rolled up, and it's his two younger girls and his wife, and the little girl, that girl was amazing.
Yeah.
Huge smile on her face done up like a butterfly. Had David the name of her brother on the wings of the butterfly that her face that was painted on her face. I talking to that little girl, man. If that didn't give you encouragement, I don't know what would, because she, like, you'd think, again, just such, like, 2 weeks, it seemed like it wouldn't be enough to get over that kind of hurt, but this little girl was just so excited to be alive, and to, like, the look in her eyes, man, everything was awesome.
Yeah.
And, like, her family was gathered together there, and they're like, look, we want some awesome games.
Yeah,
because David loved to play, and so now every time we play, we remember him. And
I'm trying not to like totally ball out here right now on the recording, so which I almost did when I first read this article. Actually, no, I did tear up when I first read the article. That's why I had to another reason why I had to reread it.
But yeah, it just beautiful. Reminds us that these things have the ability to touch that deeper hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We have that ability in those moments where our knowledge of God is not matching up with our experience with him.
Yeah.
In the middle of that disconnect, there are times and relationships. I mean, heck, the Grizzled is literally built around that. It's the relationships. It's the speeches. It's the gathering together and the support. That's how you get through the Grizzled.
Yeah.
There are ways that these games and the people that we play with help us to bridge the gap between our knowledge of God and our experience with him.
Yep.
And when you see it in action, it is a beautiful, beautiful thing. I prayed with that family, and I must have honestly sat in the booth for like, you know, it won't sound like a lot, but when you realize I'm surrounded by thousands of people in the middle of a booth where my goal is to connect with everybody who walks by, I sat in that booth for a solid 2 or 3 minutes without saying a thing.
It grabs you. It just grabs you when those moments happen. Sometimes there's nothing else you can do. You can just kind of like, wow.
Yeah, no, that was like, I felt just amazingly blessed to even pray for that family, because they've been through so much, and their testimony of their faith and how it's keeping their family together in what is basically like the pivotal sadness a family can experience.
I
don't even know how to. I don't even know how to move forward in transition now. I don't like.
There was other things we were going to talk about, but I think this is kind of the culmination point. I mean,
yeah,
it's Yeah, there's nowhere to go from that. I mean, that's a beautiful note to bring it home on, I think.
Yeah, well, I do want to just wrap up talking a little bit about the ministry and things like that, doing the
Yeah.
normal sign off that we do.
Yeah.
Definitely, guys, we've mentioned a couple things. We've mentioned the article that I wrote. We've mentioned some of the podcast stuff I did for Gen Con. If you weren't able to be at the event, I was able to get the recording of the audio from the Friday panel, which was with Chris Odie from Zombie Orpheus Entertainment. He's also a Lutheran pastor. And we have Kyle Rudge, who's just doing awesome stuff with Geekdom House up in Canada. Guys, I don't know if it'll still be up when this podcast goes live. I think it will still be, the podcast will still be running. They're putting together a gaming magazine. It's gaming and geek culture. It's
Yes.
called Area of Effect. They're running a Kickstarter right now. I'll link it when I post this particular episode of the podcast. Check it out. I know I supported it. I'm getting my copy of the special edition of the magazine. Yeah, you know, it's a bit of an ask because in this day when everything's going digital and these guys are trying to produce a physical copy, I will tell you that they don't do garbage. I've seen some of the images and some of the pictures of that's going into this magazine, and holy cow, it's going to be gorgeous. It's going to be well worth putting a couple bucks towards a physical copy. It will be well worth your time.
Yeah.
So definitely check out that Kickstarter.
Yeah, I can definitely back on that. That's or back up on that. Just because, my goodness, just some of the stuff they're bringing together is awesome.
I will also tell you that while we're still in the very preliminary stages, I'm trying to put a little bit of time between the fundraising push that was last month and trying to go for another thing again. So I'm only putting it out there just to put it in your minds right now. Come November, we're going to be doing Extra Life again, a 24-hour gaming marathon to help support a local children's hospital. There will be another Inroads Regulars team. This year, we are playing for the same hospital we've played for the past couple of years, which is Children Specialized here in New Jersey. If you want to be part of Team Inroads, you do not have to physically be with us and be playing with us here in New Jersey. You don't even have to physically be playing on the same day that we are. But I will have a link to the team website. If you want to register as a team member and you want to start raising money to support that effort, it would be awesome. Our team goal this year is $1,500. Last year we raised just under, like literally just under $1,000, and the year prior we raised about $1,400. So this year I'm going for a team goal of $1,500 raised for this hospital. I want to get that $1,000 hat trick.
Yeah.
I really love what these guys are doing. I absolutely love the fact that we're playing games to support children getting well. I love that, and you guys can be a part of that either by donating and supporting us in the effort of that we're doing for our Extra Life team, or by actually being a part of the team and raising support yourself. So be looking for more information on that as well.
Yeah.
And I will just throw it out there. I know last month was our big kind of push to get donations. We have gotten our first recurring donator. He's actually going to be part of our next play, our next actual play, our Inroads Plays game,
And this
our
was,
first.
I'm going to lay a stipulation here. This was not, or a disclaimer, this was not an effect to bribe the GM. It was
No,
not.
it better not be, because I'm in that game too. But no, we want to thank Brent for signing up to donate, and he's our first supporter in that particular way. But we would love it. Right now, we're kind of going month to month saying, what can we do? This is the money we have. What can we do this month? Doing those sustained donations helps us provide a budget idea so we can actually look ahead and plan. Especially, I'm putting together this minion crew I mentioned earlier. Part of the minion crew will be to raise support to go to Gen Con. And maybe if you want to throw in a little bit of a donation, that means just that much less that each individual person who wants to join up with us and be a gaming missionary at Gen Con next year, that might be one, less time they have to do a bake sale in order to get there.
And you don't want me baking. You do not want me baking.
And that's only one thing. There's different stuff we want to get. I just sent out a bunch of pamphlets and brochures and stickers and everything to a gaming group that wants to support Inroads. It's actually a game group that's going to meet in Indianapolis, so right around the corner from Gen Con. Yeah. I just sent them out a bunch of stuff. That stuff has to be replaced. There's lots of stuff. And if you go to our donation page, I have a link to a whole bunch of stuff that we like to see happen. Stuff that we want to grow the ministry. Again, if you can, we would love it. At no point will anything we do here on the site or on the podcast ever have any kind of blocking this as if you don't pay, you won't get this. I don't believe in doing bonus content and hiding stuff from people. Mm-hmm. But I will say that if you can, if you're available, I hope that you'd be praying about it, maybe supporting the ministry financially. We would really appreciate it, and it will allow us to do a lot more of the work. That being said, I mentioned it, I teased it. Jeff, we're going to be playing a game soon.
Yeah, Victoriana, third edition. We've got our first meeting already scheduled. It's locked in. I sent out our official invitation to all the adventurers that are going to be joining up, and I must say that I'm practicing all of my different accents that I can use during the game. So yeah, I'll have fun doing that. But I'm totally stoked for this. I mean, I told them, and I think I even posted on Facebook too, that it's just been such a pleasure to be involved with these people. Already just kind of bouncing back and forth on Messenger, just the ideas that are flying back and forth. Oh, I'm thinking I'm going to build this. And one of the guys is like brand new to gaming, to role-playing games, is he's thinking, oh, you know what? I think I'm going to draw a little bit on my history. Because he was in the Marines, and so I was an engineer. I think I may have to do like an engineer or a soldier or something. I mean, he's just like, everybody's just got so much buy-in, and it is so exciting for me to see that, to see everybody excited about it. So, yeah. Really looking forward to it. So we'll be seeing our first recording probably early September, because we'll have our first meeting here in a couple weeks, just to kind of get everybody acquainted, get the character started. And I'll probably record as much as I can of that, just to maybe hash out a little character creation session for everybody to enjoy. So yeah, doing that. I'm also putting together the first couple episodes of a vlog that I wanted to put out for role-playing games. It'll be it's basically called The Inroads Handy Haversack, so kind of borrowing the name from Dungeons & Dragons. All props to WotC. But yeah, it's just little tips and tricks, 15-minute clips that kind of gives you some tools for your game. So I'll have a lot of fun doing that. Probably have the first episode out there pretty soon.
Awesome. Well, I think that leaves us just with the traditional way we end our podcast. Thank you guys for come listening, and always remember, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.